Good morning on this fine Friday, August 13th, 2021, the Bipolar Bear Podcast in full effect. That used to be a phrase that used to be said, full effect. Anyway, I'm dating myself here for sure. So some sad news. I had this really cool watch that my wife bought me a long time ago. And it was made out of, the whole thing was made out of wood. I know these aren't like super uncommon now, but at the time it was like one of the first ones. And it broke last night. I was wrestling with our baby Bella. She's our golden retriever. And, you know, they're a really passive dog, but they're also a really strong dog. So when we were wrestling, her nail or something caught on the band. And when I pulled my hand away, it just broke the wood piece that holds the band to the watch face. So kind of sad about that. I mean, for the most part, I wear my Apple Watch, but that was a watch that was, you know, it was really cool. I mean, I'm going to keep it, of course, but I can't wear it. It's broken. The pieces are all over the place. So, you know, disappointingly, I used to get lots of compliments on it, though. It's always been a watch of like, ooh, that's a really cool watch. Is that all wood? You know, it was one of those kind of a pieces. And it wasn't like an expensive one at all. It was probably like $30. But, you know, what are you going to do? Shit happens. And so now I'm down one watch. But I mean, you know, for the most part, I wear an Apple Watch so that the government can continue to track me as best as possible. And keep an eye on my vital signs, because I know how important that is to populate my data store with all of my personal information like that. I know that's a big deal. So, hey, here's some other good news. Well, I don't know if it's good news. It's just news. Let me go check right now before I even say anything and see where it's at. But I posted a TikTok video the other day of a new song that I did that I'm working on. And like I've said before, all of my music has this tinge of negativity and just depression and sadness, because that's who I am. You know, I put on a happy face as much as I can, but for the most part, as a person, even when things are going well for me, I'm pretty miserable. But yeah, I mean, and this is going to sound ridiculous, I'm sure, but for me, I have 1,621 views of this post, and that is huge for me. And I've gotten quite a few comments too. No followers, which is fine, because why would you follow me anyway? But it's pretty interesting to see a post that's, you know, about your own sadness and sorrow become popular and get lots of comments. I guess, you know, there's some sympathetic people out there that's, you know, nice of them to reach out and say something nice to me. I think that's pretty cool. I mean, a lot of it's like user 460116742. So it's probably like not even a real person, but, you know, I guess it's okay. It's still pretty cool, I guess, to get some feedback on a post like that. But, you know, that's by far my largest viewed post, or my most viewed post on TikTok. So, you know, I'm on the verge of going TikTok famous. I'm letting you know. So everyone listening to this, you know, you knew me before the TikTok fame. Sorry, I'm just kidding. I'm kind of in a strange mood this morning. It's Pizza Friday here. Not pizza, 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 pizza. It's Pizza Friday here. We always enjoy a good selection of pizza on Friday. I don't know where we're going to get it from, but I'm sure we'll argue about it for hours before we do, as we do every week. Although one of our kids is not here right now. It's just the four of us, my wife, my daughter, my son, myself, and our youngest is still in Florida, but she'll be home tomorrow. So that's pretty exciting, because I've been kind of stressed out and panic stricken the entire time she's been gone, because, you know, big trip, airplanes, Florida's wide open, COVID running rampant potentially, or supposedly. So yeah, I want her to get back home and be safe where she belongs. I want to keep all my little kitties right with me. I'm like ruining their lives, but yeah, I like everybody to be nearby. I'm not much of a worldly explorer myself, and I'm sure my wife hates me for that, but you know, that's just how I am. So yeah, I think it's going to be an exciting weekend to have her back. I think that'll be cool. But yeah, so it's just the four of us for pizza. So actually it's probably going to be easier to order, because the less people you have contributing to the, hey, let's get it from here kind of ordeal seems to be better. So I'm kind of a proponent of smaller decision-making teams. You know, I mean, when I started out in the job I currently have, I think we had 9 people on the leadership team, and it was just way too many. It was just too many conflicting opinions that, you know, we could never get to consensus on anything without people getting all butthurt and walking out of the room. So I think less is more in that case. When you've got people in the leadership capacity, you probably don't need 8 or 9 people, depending on how big your organization is, of course, but that's a lot. Excuse me. That's a lot of people to get on board. You know, if you have lots of different personalities and lots of different agendas, you know, kind of in the undercurrent there. So with that said, I mean, I'm feeling pretty good today. You know, I don't have a headache right now. I'm drinking some green tea because I think, you know, we're out of the healthy creamer that I like. And I drank some black coffee yesterday and it was just, ugh, you know, I mean, so why bother? It really wasn't very good tasting. And green tea has caffeine in it, so I can go with that. We went to a sushi bar last night for dinner and I had some green tea there. But I'm having a little green tea with a little bit of honey. I don't know if you like any kind of teas, but I've been trying to find this new one that seems to be all the rage now with COVID. It's called white pine needle tea. I don't know if you've ever heard of it or tried it or found it, but it's not even really something that's on Amazon, other than you can buy the pine needles, but you'd have to kind of screet your own tea, or steep? Yeah, not screet. Steep your own tea from the pine needles. But I'm kind of weary of just buying pine needles and putting that in water. I mean, that's weird. I was hoping to find something from like Celestial Seasonings or, you know, one of those major tea places that kind of already packages it up for you. So you can, I do have a tea, like one of those scoop things that you can just grab raw flowers and tea and herbs and stuff like that and just sit that in your cup. But yeah, I don't know. But apparently there's some huge benefits to white pine needle tea. So I'm looking into that because maybe that would be cool. Like, again, I'm looking for things for, not just for COVID, obviously, but, you know, I try to be pretty healthy. You know, like I said, I take lots of vitamins and supplements and things like that. But I also like to do things naturally if possible, and anything that I can take that can help with inflammation and helping me with my liver, because that's probably my most pressing issue right now is the fatty liver disease, NASH. I think it's called non-alcoholic streptococcus hepatitis. I don't know, something like that. It's weird that it's got hepatitis in the word, but it's not actually hepatitis like the disease, like A, B, or C. It's just, I don't have any of that, thankfully, because that does a number on your liver as well. So I wouldn't want to be kind of dealing with that as well. But yeah, we were looking through a lot of the different medications that are out there. And, you know, there's a lot of medications I can't take that, you know, that they do a lot of damage to your liver. They've been, you know, shown to cause complications with the liver. So I'm trying to give my liver a break and help it out as much as I can by detoxifying my body as naturally as possible, so it doesn't have to do as much, so potentially it can spend some more of its time doing a little bit of healing, which would be nice, because I'd like to, I guess that's a weird thing. I'd like to stick around, you know, but if you think about it, if you really maximize each and every day of your life, does that really matter? I mean, of course it does, right? I mean, I'm not saying... you don't want to be here anymore. I'm just saying that if you really live each and every day to the fullest, then if you don't make it to the next day, you can feel, well, you'll feel nothing if you've not made it, but you can go to sleep content with the fact that, you know, hey, I lived a full life each and every day, and, you know, it is what it is. We're all going to move on at some point. I mean, that's an inevitability. There's no way around that. And I hope that there, you know, I hope greatly that there's something after this. I don't know what it could possibly be. My imagination can run wild in terms of what might be next for us all, including nothing. right? Because we're nothing before we're born, at least nothing that we remember in this state of consciousness. So I've said this before, and I think I've talked about this before. It would kind of be, to me, it would kind of be torturous to pass on and then maintain all of your memories and kind of like linger in some other dimension or some other existence, plane of existence. Because I would think for a super long time, you'd be pretty miserable like if you were a ghost, let's say, I would be definitely miserable watching my children from afar like that and watching my loved ones and family and stuff and not be able to really interact with them without scaring the shit out of them. Because, you know, we don't understand the afterlife. So if a ghost and ghosts and things like that are real, they're pretty unnerving, right? I mean, to see, like, I've seen things on TikTok and other videos and stuff where, you know, it's supposedly like supernatural behavior where things move around and noises happen and like people get dragged across a room and all kinds of tomfoolery and ballyhoo. But sorry, that was a Good Will Hunting reference. Anyway, you know, so I've seen all that stuff, but it's like, that's terrifying. I mean, if something grabbed me right now and pulled me across the room, that would not be a sign of like, oh, how cool, there's the afterlife. I'd be like, what? You know, that would be kind of scary. Or at least unsettling at the very least. Anyway, I personally would like that to happen. I don't know if any ghosts can hear me at this point, but I would like that to happen because I desperately would like to know one way or another if there is in fact something that we can, you know, look forward to. Because I think part of the problem with knowing that you're going to die one day is that you have no idea what that means. Other than you're not going to be here anymore and your physical body is no longer alive. But does that mean that your consciousness dies as well? Your soul dies? I mean, does something else happen? It seems like this cruel and sick joke that we all live in where we have the capacity to think all of these things, but we have no idea if any of this means anything or if there's anything after this. So you can sit here and contemplate your own mortality all the time, every day, if you'd like, but there's nothing that tells us what's coming or what's next. I mean, you know, you can consult religious texts, of course, and there's plenty of stories that say this, that, and the other thing about what happens after you die, but there's no actual proof or evidence that's substantiated anywhere. It's all belief. It's a faith system. That's a tough one for me. You know, I'd like to know. It's like, you know, you get in the car and you press the gas and you go forward. That's a fact. We all know that that's how it works. So if it would be great to have that kind of factual backup for, you know, hey, guess what? You're dying and this is what it means and this is where you're going and ta-da. But, you know, as far as I know, no one has really, you know, I mean, I guess you could argue that Jesus Christ came back from the dead on the third day, he rose again, that kind of thing. But, you know, those books are, they really push the boundaries of faith. I mean, there's, and I'm not laughing at it. I'm just saying it's pretty preposterous to think that that's something that actually happened, because why has it never happened again? Right. There's no other people that have been worthy of that. And there's never been a revisiting of the Son of God or God himself or herself or itself. None of that stuff. I mean, quite frankly, I believe more in the alien theory of our own existence than anything else, simply because the biological evolution of human beings doesn't make any sense on this planet. We haven't been here in the current instantiation of people the way we currently are today for very long, and it doesn't follow suit with evolution. Like, what did we evolve from to become that? Like, why are there still monkeys and apes if we were originally an ape? Why are we not seeing other apes evolve into human beings? You know, I mean, it's kind of weird. You would think that you would see that type of thing happen, and that's kind of consistent with evolution, is that once evolution decides that, hey, this quality or this kind of change in, you know, physical manifestation or whatever it is beneficial to the host, then everything is going to get that. So if it was beneficial for a monkey to evolve into a human being, then it would just keep on doing that. Follow me? Or no, you think I'm bananas at this point? Pardon the pun. Anyway, you know, well, I don't know. I mean, that's just kind of how I think about it. It seems a little preposterous to believe that, and I'm not criticizing anyone. You can believe whatever you want. I mean, it, you know, I'm sure there's compelling evidence for flat Earth, but, you know, it seems, it's so hard to, I guess, in the end, it's so hard to know what's true now because there's too much information, right? I mean, we can argue that there is as much false information as there is true information, and it's nearly indistinguishable out there in the wild. And we're using it against each other in a way to gain power and advantage rather than, you know, individually or collectively, but we're not doing it for the collective good of all mankind. We're doing it for the collective good of a political party or a country or a governing body or some bullshit reason like that, rather than actually exploring the pure science of what is really going on here. You know, now there's all this talk about aliens are here and, you know, they're releasing documentation that's now declassified that says all this stuff. And, you know, it's once people are lying sacks of shit, it's pretty difficult to walk it back, especially on huge topics like this. So if you've been lying about this shit for 50 years, I mean, who's really going to believe you going forward? You know that there's more. It's a never-ending slew of lies and deceit and just absolute bullshit, you know, that's been kept from us for whatever reason. I don't know what the benefit is. I don't see any magical technology. I mean, you know, I guess you could argue that a cell phone is kind of magical technology, but what is the end game with these things? I mean, I could stop using a cell phone right now and not really give a shit at all. It's just a convenience tool. It's nice when I'm driving somewhere. If I don't know where I'm going, I have a map that'll tell me, hey, this is where you are. This is where you want to go. Turn left up here. That's cool. But I could give up social media altogether and it would make no difference really in my life. I just do it because it's there. You know, it's not something I have to have or I need or I must have or, you know, I'm not addicted to it like that. And maybe a lot of people are, but I always looked at technology as this ability for us to do things that human beings themselves would not be able to do on their own, which is why AI always intrigued me, was because it was interesting to think about the fact that, well, you know, we're kind of stuck on, you know, we don't have the matrix in the sense where you can just plug something into your head and all of a sudden you know kung fu or you can fly a helicopter. You know, it's not like a snap your fingers and it's an instantaneous thing. It takes a lot of time for people to become specialized in anything. I mean, if you want to play the piano, it takes years. Even for prodigies, it's not like you just sit down and can wail the things out. It takes some time, right? I mean, and everything in our lives takes us time, and that's the one thing that we have that's expiring at all times is time, right? Right now, we're losing moments of time. Me speaking, you potentially listening, or me listening in the future, that kind of thing, you know, that's something you can't ever take back. So we're always losing time, right? So it's a commodity in that regard. I want to be able to do what I want to be able to do the best that I can do it literally right now. And we can't do that as human beings. So I always looked to AI to be able to be to kind of do that for us. And I mean, you could even liken that to a calculator. You know, it's able to do a calculation that's much more complex than most people can do in their head. So it's a great tool. You know, that something like that's awesome. And that's kind of what people do, is just develop tools. I mean, that's kind of all we do at this point is make tools, right? And use tools to overcome the challenges that we have or the limitations that we have as human beings. Whereas most other animals don't really do that. They're kind of what they are and they embrace. You know, maybe they don't consciously embrace it, but you know, they are what they are and they live on instinct and they just do whatever they're doing. And it's basically about survival, where we're about a whole different thing. And that kind of gets me back to what I was originally talking about, is it's almost like a sick joke where we have this capability in our minds to concoct and think and dream up and envision all of this unreal stuff. And then we can use all these tools that we've created to see the universe and see all this stuff that we have no idea what any of it is, what it really means. We have very little understanding of these things. And then we die. and have no real idea what that means. And we've been here. So to me, it's kind of like this perverse joke of like, hey, I'm going to let you know about all this crap, but you're never really going to understand any of it. So to me, that kind of pushes me in two different directions. One, it's a sick joke, right? That's just the way it goes. And maybe it's three directions. Two, we're actually not from here. And three, there's got to be something else after this, right? So let's start with two. If we're not really from here, I mean, it makes sense because in large part, our world, and this has been stated many times over by scientists and cosmologists and things like that and biologists, you know, so many things had to be the perfect condition for us to survive and live on this planet that our ecosystem is so fragile, you know, that we're concerned about 2 or 3 degrees of temperature rise, and that's going to ruin the Earth. And let's be clear, that's not going to ruin the Earth for anyone but human beings and potentially other biological life, you know, that doesn't swim, right? Because if the Earth just became covered in water, there's plenty of fish in the sea, so to speak, that would be fine and not give two shits about that and continue to go on. It's only going to really ruin human beings. And that's really what we're getting at here is that, yeah, if we are affecting the atmosphere, the ozone layer, or the environment, or whatever we're doing with all the stupidity that we do each and every day for money, then yeah, we're potentially putting ourselves and our future selves at risk for not having a planet that's habitable by a biological life that we are, right? So what would be the next logical step? Well, let's figure out how to transfer our consciousness into something that's, you know, like silicon-based that would last literally forever. That's a possibility. I mean, we're getting to the point now where I think I read an article not too long back where they have a biological hard drive of some kind. It's made out of cells. It's not silicone. It's not hardware. They're able to store data in like, you know, well, DNA is basically a data store, right? I mean, it's got billions of genes in there and you know, in pieces of information that make up human beings and each individual person. So if we're able to manipulate and control that and grow something to that extent, why wouldn't you be able to make a clone and then transfer your consciousness into, let's say, a clone of yourself when you were 25 in the perfect peak of life, you know, physical health and all that good stuff. You could just transfer who you are today. So I'm a 50-year-old man, put me into a 25-year-old body. Holy cow. That sounds like euphoria to me. Now, we have this conundrum, word of the day, of course, gotta always bring that up, of why would we continue to have more people if we could sustain the current number of people indefinitely? So you know there's going to be a battle over this, and it's only going to be for the ultra-rich. I mean, we know that already, right? I mean, we've seen movies about that plenty of times, and that's just how it works, right? Like, I didn't get to go to space. Right, I don't have $200-300 million to go up to space and float around and see the Earth from the, you know, the outer atmosphere and things like that. But Richard Branson can do that. So, wouldn't you think a guy like that would, of course, be able to do something like this? And because he can afford to do it, so it's such a flaw in our society that things are dictated that way. Because why does that particular individual feel as if they're more worthy than someone else simply because they've earned more money? And I have a huge, huge problem. That's another conundrum. I have a huge issue with that being the judgment that we put upon everyone in terms of success and inclusion and pretty much everything, right? I mean, what do we see on TV? A bunch of poor people? No, you see these ultra rich people, everybody's beautiful and everyone's looks great and is wearing real expensive this and fancy that and driving a $200,000 supercar and lives in a $50 million, 60,000 square foot mansion. You know, I mean, that's like what it's all about, it would appear, right? Or that's the illusion that's been put out there. So what does somebody like me have to look forward to? I'm not going to be able to do any of this stuff. It's not going to be me that gets kept around. There was an interesting episode of, I think I've mentioned this before, of Black Mirror, where when you died, you had the option to just die, or you could have your consciousness put into like a matrix type thing, like into the internet. And you could keep on living just in this thing. So your retirement was towards financially supporting you in this afterlife kind of experience for, I guess, as long as you could afford to do it, you know, which was pretty interesting because, I mean, you could go back in time and basically relive your entire life on a moment's whim. You know, in 1 minute you'd be in the 80s and you could jump to the 60s or the 50s or wherever you wanted to go. You know, this thing was able to simulate those experiences for you and you could go enjoy that. Now, keep in mind, I have really no idea why I'm talking about all this morning. This is a really, I've really gone off on a tangent. I'm not sure where all this is coming from, but I think it's a really interesting kind of dialogue or monologue in this case. It would be an interesting dialogue to have with somebody that has an opposing opinion, because I think it would be fun to hear, you know, and interesting to hear other people's thoughts on these topics of conversation to see, you know, well, what do you think is coming? What do you think is next? What do you think we're here for? How do you think we got here? I'd love to have a debate like that with other people, an open and honest one, and not like a ridicule and you're an idiot and, you know, slamming people for their beliefs, just listening and, you know, trying to piece things together objectively and figure out, you know, maybe we'll come to a better conclusion together than we would individually. And I think that's, you know, it's a typical debate, but I think we've really lost a lot of that. It's so much about positioning and getting in the right place and saying the right thing in front of the right people so that you get the right response and you get the nod, you know, rather than just, you know, and maybe I'm on this because I'm, you know, I'm kind of on the cusp of a new opportunity, in my professional career. So what I'm able to feel now is this complete lack of fear of any repercussions in my current role because I'm going to be leaving soon. You know, if all goes to plan, I'll be putting my notice in and leaving. And when you do that, you can ultimately and truthfully become the real person that you are because you're no longer bound or governed by that fear of like, well, shit, if I say that, am I going to get fired? Or if I do this, are they going to write me up? You know, all those checks and balances that are put in place to really stifle you as a human being go away because you don't give a shit anymore. You're leaving. So I think the ideal scenario is to be able to be like that. And I wish employers would get this. I sincerely do. And that's why I've always wanted to be like the head of everything. It's not an ego thing. It's that I truly believe that if you were to approach the way your leadership, well, I'm going to say approach again. If you were to approach leadership the way I'm explaining it and running a company this way, you would have just an outstandingly and wildly successful and exciting and fun and enjoyable environment because people are very afraid of losing their jobs, so much so that they compromise who they are in conversations because they don't want to lose their job. You know, I was talking to my wife about this and, you know, when I was telling her, I had to sign the offer letter and she's like, oh, for how long? And I'm like, no, it's not a contract. You know, I'm still like in New York State, we have it's called at will employment. So I can be terminated, fired, let go for no reason at all. I'm pretty sure if there's no documentation or reason that there's no battle for unemployment benefits, but nevertheless, I can quit at any point. And that's, you know, I can just walk out and I'm done. And the employer can also just say, hey, you're done. We don't want you anymore. And thanks, bye. At will employment. So I've never had a contract where, you know, like an athlete, for example. And I think this is why it's such a beautiful thing. Not saying that I need a contract for $5 million or something crazy like that. But the fact that you're locked into a place, I see at this point in my career, a lot of benefit to that in terms of people just being able to, now, of course, you'd have to make sure you're getting the right people. That would be a critical factor in this approach. So let me be clear about that. You know, you don't want to lock in some shitbag that is terrible for a 5-year contract and now you're stuck with them. So you'd have to be fairly selective in who you're bringing in and make sure that they fit the culture and they're the right person for the job, that kind of a thing, and for the company. But I think it would be very interesting to see what kind of effect it would have if people could stop worrying about, I might not have a job tomorrow because they might just fire me because they felt like it, or somebody new joined the company and they just don't like me, so they fired me. Or, oh, the company got acquired, so, well, you don't have a job anymore. You know, those types of things, as an employee, at least for me, weigh heavily on my mind, and they interfere with my productivity. If I'm worrying about what you think of me, I'm not giving you me. I'm giving you what I think you think me should be. And that isn't really me most of the time. You know, and I think a big part of the reason that I am where I am in my current employer is because I said, fuck that. And I just was me, because they said, hey, we want you to challenge us. And I mean, I think the actual words were to disrupt us, Garrett. Garrett, we want you to disrupt us. Come in here and show us how it's done. So I said, I took that at face value and said, okay, I'll absolutely do that. And when you're wrong, I'm going to tell you you're wrong. And unfortunately, these people were like, completely unwilling to hear that they were wrong and that they didn't know what the hell they were talking about. So that led me to the position that I'm in now, which is why people don't do what I do, because you end up demoted, fired, you know, whatever the case may be. But you can't really be the real you if you're always worried about that. And I wonder why employers don't really understand that you need to let people be who they are, good, bad, or otherwise. And there's nothing wrong with expectation and accountability. And I would, in fact, argue for both. If you don't set the expectation, hey, I want your real personality. I want you. I want to hear what you have to say. If it's terrible, I still want to hear it. Now, I'm not saying people should run around F-bombing everybody and being completely unprofessional, but I'm saying that, you know, you really need to contribute, and I want you to contribute. And I've said several times here that, you know, when we have meetings, people are literally silent. They say nothing. And that is so toxic. That is such a sign of a toxic, fucked up work environment. If you're in meetings with people that are highly intellectual and intelligent and skilled in specific areas, and they don't contribute and they don't say shit in meetings, that's a big problem, in my opinion. That's a big problem. Those people should be voicing their concerns, but what's happened is that they've voiced their concerns a few times and have been completely ignored or told no or just blasted to the point where they just, why bother? It's not going to change. And I've mentioned that before, that is the environment that I work in, is that why bother? It's not going to change. And I did what I did, and what ended up happening to me was that I was just removed from the equation so that I could no longer do it anymore. So, I mean, I'm not saying that's a good thing, and I'm not laughing about it as if I'm proud of it, but the fact remains that when you're leading an organization or any group of people, you cannot be like that, or it's going to fail, or at the very least, it's not going to be as good as it could be, right? Maybe it will still be successful in spite of itself, but it'll never really be that culture that everyone is striving for, because it takes a lot of humility to get to that point. As a leader, you have to recognize that, you know, you're in charge of propping everybody else up, not yourself. It's not about you. Even though you're the head of the company, it's not about you. And man, so many people just, they don't extract that. They don't ascertain that from any of the training, maybe they've not had any training. I don't know. They don't get it. You know, these people sit in these seminars and meetings and whatever's, and they just feel like they're the shit. And that, you know, it's like, hey man, you still have a long way to go. You have no effing idea what you're doing. And I know you don't want to hear that at 60 something years old, but it's true. Just because you're the CEO doesn't mean that you have any fucking idea what you're doing. It really doesn't. You know, especially these people that have just fallen into these positions because of family or connections or duration of time in an organization, they just naturally get promoted up because they're the highest ranking or longest tenured person in the organization. That doesn't mean that you're going to be a great CEO. I mean, case in point, where I am at now, it's exactly what happened. And the guy, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but he's a complete phony. And he doesn't have any idea what he's doing. He really doesn't. It's all talk and it's zero follow-up. There is nothing real that comes out of the discussions and the comments that are made. And it's just all about this guy. So it's not at all, it's completely transparent. And this is why half the freaking company is leaving or has already left. I mean, and I'm not even it's not half, but it's, you know, at least 10 people have left in the last few months. That's a pretty decent amount of people for a company that's about 100, you know, 10%. That's pretty decent turnover. And it's not in the positions that are not critical. It's in critical positions like, you know, my position, for example. I'm leaving. The guy before me left. The guys on my other team, three of them have already left. It'll just be one guy after I'm gone. It'll just be one guy. That was part of my original team. And we were the top level engineering, tier three engineering team for this company with our architects and DevOps engineers. So they'll have one person, they'll have no people that know anything about Linux and AWS. So you think that's a good thing? Do you think that this whole experience is telling you that what you've done is the right thing? I think what they'll do is just, you know, oh, you know, we're thinning the herd, you know, we're trying to get they're just going to lie about it. Instead of owning it, because they're so delusional that they think they're doing the right thing. They have no humility. They can't look at themselves and go, holy shit, we are fucking this up big time. Stop immediately. What is going on? Why is everybody leaving? You know, and again, it's not me. It's like I'm sure they will give two shits that I'm leaving. It's all these other people that have been around for 8, 9, 10 something years. They're done. So these were people that were standing strong for a long time and have just had it and left and took all their knowledge and all their information and all their skill with them. That's, you know, like I've said before, there's a lot of tribal knowledge that, you know, is built up that isn't documented. It just isn't. We had an issue come up yesterday and it was exactly that. It was like, I don't know, this was supposed to have been handed off and it wasn't. So I don't know anything about it. Nobody else knows anything about it. So now the whole company is like, well, we don't know anything about this. How do you go tell a client that with a straight face and then tell them, oh yeah, we're supporting you. We got it. Everything's covered. It's just bullshit. So I can't tell you, you know, and I'm not trying to jinx this because I never like to do that before everything is finalized. Yes, I've received an offer. I accepted the offer and but you know, there's still background checks and things like that. So not that I have anything to be concerned about with that, but I like to make sure 100% ducks are in a row before I go ahead and think that anything is happening. But that being said, at the same time, I don't care one way or another. If this somehow didn't work out and they fired me, good for you. I've said before, I've just had it with this whole, like, I got to suck up and be something I'm not for people and pretend to be this other thing. It's just, who can really flourish when they're not truly being true to themselves and being who they are? What I bring to the table is Garrett Michael Conklin. If you don't want that, don't hire me. You know, I mean, if you want someone to come in and pretend to be something else, I'm so sick of being in those environments. It's just nauseating. It's really counterproductive. It goes nowhere. It's just phony. It's just bullshit to live, to work in those environments. And, you know, of course those things bleed into your personal life as well, because you're fake all day at work. You're going to come home and it's a different, you're going to flip that switch and go back to being a regular person. It's not as easy as it seems, at least for me. You know, I don't like that. I want, and I'm not trying to be selfish and say that, oh, I'm so great. Believe me, I have a long way to go. I have a lot to learn. There's plenty of things that I can improve on. I don't mean it that way. I mean that You need to embrace what I bring to the table fully, not criticize the fact that I'm telling you from my experience that what we're about to do is incorrect and then getting all upset about that. Should I not have said it? Didn't you hire me because of that? That was the whole purpose, was that I bring a unique set of experience and skill sets to the table that you don't currently have. So if you don't want that, why would you have ever hired me to begin with? It just makes no sense. But now I understand why, because it was all bullshit. It was to continue to put out this facade that we have, well, we have this, and this guy's got all this experience in AWS, and he's been here, and he's worked at Yahoo, and blah, blah, blah. They just wanted to be able to say shit like that. They didn't want me to actually contribute anything, though. And that's where I got snowed. I got confused on the fact that I actually thought they wanted me to come in and affect change and make things better and take them to the next level, when all they really wanted to do was say that I work there and have my credentials on their list of, whoa, we have 167 years of combined IT experience. Yeah, doing everything wrong, moron. You're not doing it right. I mean, how many times do clients have to complain before you realize, something's wrong? So they're just, it is what it is. It's just not the right place for me. So either way, no matter how this pans out, even if I end up without a job, honestly, I don't give a shit. I'm done worrying about that stuff. Things will work out. Things will, something will happen. I'll find a place at some point. And if we got to be broke for a little while, then that's what it means. I'm just so done with wasting my time on people that are not worth it. I'm so done with that. It's such a tiring and wasteful thing to do with your time, is be around the wrong people. And I know plenty of successful people always say this, well, you got to drop those people that are holding you back. Yeah, that's I think what I'm saying here. I got to drop the people that are holding me back, not even from being successful or making more money or moving up the ladder. Just drop the people that are poisonous in my life. Just get away from these clowns that just make me miserable every single day. And I'm, very excited to be hopefully around a group of people that are welcoming. And, again, I don't know. I mean, it just like they don't know it, you don't know what you're going to get from a few conversations with somebody. It's a difficult thing to do that, right? So you'll only know that after you put some time in there and see how things go. But in the end, I think that you got to give things a new try, or you got to renew your sense of commitment to, hey, there are better people out there that are better matched with my personality and where I'm coming from, and I'll give it a try and let's see where it goes. And if it doesn't work out, move on to the next thing. I mean, that's just all there is to it. But I guess my original point was, it would be so nice to be locked into, if it was the right circumstance and the right situation. It would probably be a nightmare if not. So that's probably why this doesn't happen very often. But I think it's more the employer trying to protect themselves than anything else. But I think what they're missing out on is that if I didn't have to worry about my job for the next 3 years, like I couldn't get fired, or we had some amicable agreement where if they wanted to get rid of me, they'd still have to pay me, kind of a thing, I could fully and 100% and unequivocally focus on what I'm trying to do rather than trying to keep my job. Do you get what I'm saying? We spend an inordinate amount of time and effort just making sure that we continue to have a job. Pro football players, yeah, they got to play, they got to do their thing, but it's all about performance. They're signed to a contract for a period of time. They don't have to worry about that crap for that entire, whatever that duration is. I mean, can you imagine having a 10-year contract that was worth like $5 million? Which isn't ridiculous. I mean, if you're making a six-figure income, that's really not that much money, right? Each year. It's not like you're making, $10 million a year or something like that. Making, $500,000, $250,000? I mean, that's not crazy. But we could shrink it down. Let's say it was a 5-year deal for $1 million, but you'd have that security for 5 years, and that company would have that security of having you there for 5 years, unequivocally committed and focused, laser focused on making that company great. and doing your job and making it happen. And not that I'm saying people would treat each other poorly, but you could hold people truly accountable. Hey, man, you're not doing what we need. Step your game up. Let's go. You know, and I don't know, maybe that's a bad example, but I think that I've never had that experience before. So I've always lost some of my productivity to the fact that I have to worry about my job and having one, you know, and maybe I shouldn't say that because I'm going to upset this guy and then they're not going to like me and then they're going to demote me. Well, you can see that when I didn't do that, that's exactly what happened. I didn't play that game and I didn't play the political crap and look where I landed, you know, not where I want to be. They just didn't want me to do that. So I think it'd be an interesting experiment anyway. But in fact, I don't have that with this new opportunity that may manifest itself for me. So I'll probably never know what that's like. And maybe there's downsides to it as well. Like if you get stuck with a company you hate and the people you don't like or a team you don't like, maybe it's miserable for those 5 years, but at least you don't have to worry about the financial component and that kind of thing. And when you become a free agent, you can then shop yourself around and see if there's a better opportunity for you out there. And we've seen that happen a lot, right? I mean, like Marshawn Lynch is a great example. He was with the Buffalo Bills for a while, didn't really do much. And then he went to, I don't know where he is now, but I know he did really well after he left the Bills. So, you know, maybe it's that. But I think you're able to focus when you don't have to worry about, oh, am I going to get fired today? Or, oh, these people are not going to like me? Or am I going to get written up? Or any number of just bullshit things that get in the way and take up time that you should be spending on focused, laser-focused work for the company. I don't know. That's just my opinion on that. I don't know if it means anything at all, or who knows? What do I know? Here I am sitting in a position where all of the bad stuff just happened to me. So I'm not sure I'm one to give much advice on this in terms of doing it the right way, but it's an interesting concept anyway. Okay, let's get on to our daily poem from Poetic Rhetoric, Nonsensical Blasphemy by Garrett M. Conklin. You know, now I wonder, every time I do this, I wonder if people just stop the podcast right now. I mean, because I do put it at the end on purpose, because if you enjoy listening to anything at the beginning, at least I don't make you suffer through this at the beginning. But this is a short one today. But I'd love to hear from you. If you think this is a total joke and you don't like listening to these, just let me know, because I've only made it through about 40 pages of this book so far, and there's hundreds to go. Anyway, today's poem is called Casual Pain. Now there's pain in my shoulder as if I'd picked up a boulder. Yes, it's definitely one-sided, and I don't think it collided with anything hard or anything at all. It hadn't been jarred or slip, slide, or fall. I really don't know what is causing this pain, but I can assure you this isn't a feign. As if it weren't enough, I have to play tough and not whine and cry out aloud. Not even a peep, I'll try and get some sleep and hopefully wake up on a cloud. Well, that was a short and sweet one, right? I think that one was kind of about, let's see, what could that have been about? What do you think it was about? Yeah, do you really give a shit what it was about? I think it was just about me being miserable as always, right? Aren't I? I'm using it as pain. I guess I had pain in my shoulder one day. I don't know what I'm talking about here. These poems are hilarious. That's why this book is such a number one bestseller on the Amazon book list. Because they're totally ridiculous in most cases. Anyway, that can mean whatever it can mean to you. I don't even care to decide what it means to me right now. It was just noise. Anyway, with that, thanks for listening. Hope you have a good Friday and a good weekend. If I don't talk to you, I'll probably try to get in there on Saturday or Sunday, but maybe not. Maybe I'm overdoing it to some extent. I mean, you need this every single day, right? That's kind of crazy. Anyway, talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.